Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the Curzon podcast, where we will be discussing Todd Solondz's latest pitch black comedy, Wiener Dog. I'm Sam Howlett, and this week I'm joined by Helen Seymour.
Hello.
And making his live podcast debut, Jake Cunningham.
Hello.
Hi, Jake.
Hiya.
Does it feel weird to be in here now?
Yeah.
You're used to editing out our voices, and now you're actually one of them.
I know. I've become the thing that I was so loath to create.
How very Frankenstein of you. Once again, massive thanks to CSR for letting us use their shiny studio. Really helps us a lot. So, as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're discussing Wiener Dog, which is four separate stories linked only by a Dachshund. Is that how you pronounce those dogs?
Yeah, I mean...
Sausage dog, Wiener
Dog.
Sausage
dog.
Yeah, here it's a sausage, isn't it?
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, and then, or Dachshund, or Dachshound.
Dachshound.
I've heard.
Really?
Yeah.
So, multiple names for this this creature.
It's wonderful.
Yeah. It is great. It's so cute. Yeah. It's a female dog as well, as far as we know. That's what they say in the beginning. They can call it her. They're all completely separate, apart from the fact they all contain this dog, which we assume is the same dog, although actually in the last two stories, we're not really sure, because we don't see the actual transition. Each story is in the typical Todd Solondz way of being incredibly... sad and tragic, but often with a lot of comedy. Jake, do you want to tell us a bit more about Todd Solondz's previous works and why you should see a Todd Solondz film?
Okay, so Todd Solondz, or my favourite Todd Solondz film, is a film called Happiness from the late 90s. I'm going to go straight into some essay now. It's a very pre-9/11 American thing in that a mid-budget film could really criticize sort of middle-class America and get away with it because you had American Beauty at that time.
Yeah.
And I think Safe as well with Julianne Moore.
Todd Haynes.
Yeah. And you could get away with that at that time. But I think we definitely, post-9/11, you don't see less of that criticizing the American ideals. And if you look at Happiness, there's a lot of people that are in... what we would see as mildly successful careers, mm-hmm. And positions that we would think are stable and would provide you with happiness. Yeah? So
with you.
You get it.
You get
the
it,
film,
guys.
The film
you
is,
get it.
The film is called Happiness, but it questions what it means to be happy. I know. It's a big idea.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of good stuff in there and some really troubling things. I lent it to Helen on DVD a couple of years ago now.
Yeah.
And Helen, if you'd like to tell us how that affected you.
Helen was broken. Helen did not cope. The naive thing that I was thought it was a film about being happy.
Which it is.
Which it is, but in a terrible... It's very good. It's very, very dark. Darkly funny in ways that talking about subjects that people now are scared to talk about and scared to make film about, rape, paedophilia, sort of controlling issues and
incest
and oh my goodness, but it's really good.
Mm. Mm. And you've got, it's a very, it's an underseen Philip Seymour Hoffman role.
Yeah. Mm.
And I think in comparison to his role in Magnolia as well, in a short space of time, he really delivers quite an incredible performance. It contains one of my favourite final lines in film, which is utterly horrible. And
surprising that that got through, like, that whole bit.
Yeah.
We can't talk about it, but I'm surprised that was made before, like, in the late 90s.
I think this film was dropped by its distributor and then had to be picked up again by a separate one after people just like, we're not showing this to anyone.
Yeah.
This can't be shown
Very
to people.
Brave filmmaking.
Yeah. And I think that plays into something like Happiness, which people have seen and know the reputation of, then played into the marketing of Wiener Dog.
Yeah, well, it's 100%. A Todd Solondz film. That's a brand in itself, kind of now, isn't it? That people will go and see a Todd Solondz film. But apart from that, I think the other thing that would draw people to Wiener Dog is its cast. It has one of the best casts of the year. Mm. Suicide Squad was released last week, and that's an ensemble film, as is this, but this has the far more showier cast, I think, in terms of acting skill and quality. So you've got Greta Gerwig, Danny DeVito, Tracy Letts, Julie Delpy, Soja Mamet, Ellen Burstyn, really amazing actors. And it's great to see them all in the same film. Not often showing the same scenes, but really terrific.
And with a cast like that, you would so easily, if you were on the marketing side of things, you would want to put those people on your poster.
Yeah.
However.
However, we just have...
half a Wiener Dog.
Yeah, we have the back end of a Wiener Dog.
A Wiener Dog's arse.
Yeah. And I think that's great. Yeah. I think they're really lovely posters. I'm not scared, but I'm sure they intentionally just did that to encourage people that think, oh, it's a lovely sausage dog. Let's go watch the film about
the sausage. Oh, it's like Lassie, but in a sausage.
Oh, look how it connects them. It'll be like War Horse.
Well, that's the thing, is that this is a film, all the stories are connected by a dog, but it's really, the film is nothing to do with dogs.
The film is about humans.
Yeah, and the dog's incidental, largely.
Yeah, and I think in one story in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, as usual with the show, we're going to talk about sort of the end of each story and more spoilery stuff later on. But for now, just broadly, let's just go through each story very quickly, just discuss them. So they're all, I think they're all very much about loneliness. Mm-hmm. And there's a nice sort of track for each one where you have childhood, young adulthood, end of your career and end of your life.
Yeah.
So there's a nice sort of thematic progression, a nice arc over each one. So let's kick off with the first one. And this is where we have a young boy who's just recovered from cancer, and his dad, played by Tracy Letts, buys him this Wiener Dog. So what did you make of this story? Because I think this really sets the tone very well. And you were saying to me earlier, actually, the opening shot also sets the tone.
Yeah, the opening shot is a really long dolly shot along a row of rescue dogs waiting to be collected. And then it rests on an empty cage, and the eponymous Wiener Dog gets put in this cage, and the titles come up, and... almost unnecessarily long.
It drags on. Yeah, I thought for the film's like an hour and 28 minutes, and I thought, you're wasting a lot of time with these opening credits.
I don't think it's wasted.
I loved it.
It's not wasted.
It's not, no. It's not, no, but it feels like that for a while. It's like,
and
this
the
is
font.
Very long.
Yeah.
The font and the green.
Yeah.
Of the cage, it's brilliant. And also, I was sort of that person because I was like, look at the dog. Oh, I like this dog.
Yeah. But then, yeah, that's
you
it.
Fell for
you,
it
see,
Helen.
You see the dog.
They got
and you.
You
think, this is a lovely dog. And then the camera stays there, and then the dog looks confused, and the dog looks worried,
yes,
and it doesn't know what to do. And that sense of just being uncomfortable and just having to watch it, that the camera doesn't move away, and you're just forced to watch this thing that you don't want to, a thing that you know can be loving and can be cute, and it's just caged up.
It's got this really horrible, lurid green light as well over it, kind of just... like something you'd find just a really bad quality surgery or something. Just looks really gross, really horrible. Yeah, so then we see that the dog is given to the boy. And I think this opening story is to like dispel any pre-existing conceptions you have about dogs in films. Because dogs are often part of family films. So like you said earlier, Lassie or Beethoven.
Marley and Me.
Marley and Me.
Oh, yeah.
They're all, dogs are very seen as nice, innocent. They bring families together, and this opening, the opening story just completely blows that out of the water. There's a particular piece interaction between Julie Delpy as the mother to the boy, which is really quite disturbing, that she's talking about this thing with a child. And I think props to Julie Delpy for actually having to do that scene with a child there.
Yeah, I mean,
it's really impressive.
I don't think it's a spoiler to say that the conversation they're having is about why you should spay a dog.
Yeah.
But it's the way that it's the analogy yeah. she uses to that, and it's the bluntness of how she delivers it to this child. And I think that's something that runs throughout Solon's films, is that adults have conversations with children very honestly. And I think that's very evident in Happiness as well, in arguably a much more perverse and darker way. But it's actually quite refreshing to see, because it is, you do see a lot of time, even in kids' films, it's a common trait that the adults talk down to the kids, and the kids just want to be understood.
Yeah.
And we see that a lot, and in here, the child is getting brutally honest treatment. And if you think he's been through cancer, he probably deserves yeah. to be spoken to like an adult. And yeah. But it is uncomfortable to watch.
And also, the way the kids talk is kind of a salonzy thing now, because they have, in Happiness as well, they have this kind of quite innocent, quite high-pitched voice that's quite creepy. Like, and they'll talk quite slowly as well, like, "Mummy, why?" And all the children in that court sort of have that tone of talking, and it just puts you on edge a little bit, and really opens up for that blunt conversation to kind of juxtapose with that very sweet voice. It's very clever.
Yeah, this is a really nice way to open the film, I think. And
also, the boy, there's lots of scenes where he's just lying very still.
Yeah, and there was one shot where I thought, "Is the boy dead?
Yeah,
is this where this
is
going to go?"
Which is great.
Yeah,
there's also, I'm not going to go into detail, but I'll just say doggy diarrhea.
Yes, lots of shots of diarrhea in this.
Yeah.
Again, awkwardly long tracking shot.
Yeah.
With some lovely music, lovely yeah. piano.
Oh, it's Claire de Lune. It's very nice.
That was really nicely done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Claire de Lune runs throughout the whole opening sequence. Actually, just reminded me of, it's the end of Ocean's 11.
It is, yeah, well. When they're standing by the fountain.
When you've just pulled off the heist of the century. And now, where previously I just thought, "Oh, Claire de Lune, it's that lovely one from Ocean's 11. Now it's going to be, "Oh, it's that diarrhea tracking shot from Wiener Doll."
I also love the scene in the car where Julia Delpy's telling the son about how you have to break a dog's, like, housebroken. Because what does it mean to, like, housebreak? She says, "You've got to break a dog's will, like, break him down, break down his personality till he submits to your will." And it's like, this is not going to be a good film for this dog. It's a very bad omen. It's also nice, this story is a nice way to play into that, this sort of thing that children learn about life through pets. Like, you learn about sex through pets when you have to, like, get them fixed, and that's when often children first learn about the idea of mating and sex through things their parents tell them about their pets, and then also about death, the whole thing that you have to put animals down. They learn a lot about death through that, so that was a nice way of just fitting that in as well, I thought, in the story. So the second story, you have Greta Gerwig and Kieran Culkin.
Yep.
And they are playing characters who have appeared in a Todd Solondz film before. They both appeared in Welcome to the Dollhouse, but it's different actors now. And Greta Gerwig's character is a vet assistant.
Yeah, it seems to be.
Yeah, who takes the dog in, renames it Doody.
Yep.
As in Doody. What do you think of this story? This is the most uplifting story,
yeah.
I think, compared to the others.
I would say so. I think it starts very very darkly, as we expect.
Yeah.
But it has the biggest upward curve out of all of them.
Yeah.
There's a wonderful shot just at the very start where Greta Gerwig's character is in a shop, just a food shop, and she completely blends in with all the other items in there. And I think it's just emphasising how nondescript as a person she is.
Yeah.
Like, she just completely goes along with whatever this guy says, and she does just blend into the background. They really downplay her outfit. They scrape her hair back.
Big, very old-fashioned glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to see Greta Gerwig not playing a trendy New York millennial for once. This film's kind of like this section is like a mini road movie as well, and the dog's just there.
Yep.
Helena, what do you think about this story compared to the others? Because for me, I think it's my least favourite.
No, I liked it. It was the happiest one of the lot. Although there's still some pretty dark bits in there.
Yeah. I think we'll talk more about this in the spoiler section.
Yeah,
this one
has got
a nice, not quite a twist, but a nice sort of
revelation moment. But like we said at the beginning, it's not really about the dog. It's about the dog's owners and how they interact. And they kind of just, all of them, just sort of ignore the dog.
Yeah. The dog's very much ignored. And then I love the way this transitions to the next story in the most bizarre way. You have this weird intermission.
It's my favourite thing a film has ever done. It's just a dog with some really rubbish background.
It's like a really bad country music, country song about the wiener dog travelling across the world. And you just see the dog walking.
Like the incredible journey.
Yeah, and in the background you have all these different places he visits. Completely takes you out of the film, but in a wonderful way. I did really enjoy that.
And the song comes back.
When the song came on at the end of the credits, I was like, I'm quite happy to hear this song again.
Yeah.
And the lyrics, it's like, she just carries on.
Yeah.
Like,
looking for some shelter and a place
to rest her head.
It sounds like something off of a stagecoach.
I know.
Yeah.
That could have gone on for 10 more minutes for me.
So we next see the wiener dog.
I think it's the same dog. You said at the beginning you didn't think it was.
Well, I just think that between the second and third, and then the third and fourth, you don't really see how the dog ends up with its next owner.
I think that's what the intermission is almost Solon's saying, this dog's been everywhere. From this point on, I don't need to link.
It's like a spirit. It's almost like a spiritual, mythical dog that just appears when people need it.
Yeah. During that intermission, you see it sort of going across like a polar ice cap, and then through a western
woodland.
Yeah.
A crime scene.
Yeah. It's been everywhere. So I think that intermission is.
Don't worry about how it gets to it.
It just
got there.
It's either been there or it's going there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is actually, just a fact for you, it's actually a different dog.
It was, yeah. Todd Solondz was asked, so they asked him in an interview, how was the film with the dog? And he said, oh, we used 4 different dogs. And they were like, oh, and how were they? And he said, I just found all of them extremely dumb.
Yeah.
I think intentionally as well, he's picked a wiener dog because they're really popular at the moment.
They're very popular and they're amazing looking dogs, but they do look ridiculous
and
well.
And the whole thing about they're quite unhealthy animals.
Yeah.
Like because
they're really long and have tiny legs.
They have loads of health problems, don't
and they've,
they?
Well, they've centuries of inbreeding.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Has created that.
Yeah. And it is this the manifestation of humans forcibly. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Pushing these animals together to create this creature.
It's a weird mutant thing it's created, and it's now a chic to have.
Mm.
Yeah, I think it's quite telling. So we next find the dog owned by Danny DeVito, gloriously schlubby Danny DeVito, as a failed screenwriter teaching screenwriting at University of New York. This was, I think, might be my favourite one.
Ooh.
Controversial.
Yeah.
So I think Helen and I may agree on this.
Yeah.
One.
Yeah. Go
it's
ahead.
Your least favourite.
Yeah. In itself, it works as a short film. And I was saying to Helen before the show started that it almost feels like Todd Solondz had an idea for a short film and needed
just
a vessel
put it in.
For it.
Okay.
The dog stands for, I don't know. But it doesn't feel necessary to this. Whereas in the other ones, I feel
dog
like
plays
the dog
a major
yeah,
part.
The dog is part of it.
And also this kind of, it has its own narrative in terms of film. There's quite a lot of jokes about it because it's all done at New York University where Tom Solondz teaches.
He teaches
so
at
that
Tisch.
Is right on the edge of what he's allowed to do. So it really did feel like a short film in itself, which was really funny. Like there's some great moments where they're interviewing students.
Oh,
there's
that's
one
great.
That is just...
It's so fun. That's why I think this was the funniest one. That's probably why I liked it. It's really, I mean...
But it does slightly feel detached.
Yeah, I agree with you that if... Well, because... So his thing is that he's a man out of time. This kind of, the kind of old school screenwriting he did no longer exists anymore, and all these kids, they talk about, oh, I want to write about queer theory and this and that, and he says to them, the only thing you need to know when you're writing a screenplay is, what if, then what? And they kind of, they had this former student who's now a popular filmmaker comes back and he says, you don't need film school, and then they kind of, he kind of insults Danny Vito's character, which is quite a sad moment. But this is the only segment in the film that actually uses what if, then what, I thought. Because all the other three seemed very mundane, matter-of-fact, this just happens. Whereas this one, I'm not going to spoil the ending,
but what if he did that?
What if a grumpy, down-on-his-luck screenwriter did this?
Yeah.
This seems the most outlandish, the most, the one that sort of... But I think that's very self-aware. I think he's done that completely on purpose.
And I agree with you on those points. I just think what you are saying that makes it feel not part of the other four stories. It makes it feel like it's a self-contained thing that
on its own.
Yeah, perhaps should have been made or developed further and extended on. It just feels a bit alien within these four stories.
Yeah, I agree with
that. I think I just really enjoyed seeing Danny DeVito do this kind of acting again as well.
Yeah, oh, DeVito's very good.
He's
very good. There's a great bit as well where he's. I think it's after he gets made fun of and he goes home and he's lying on his bed.
Yeah.
On his tummy, and he's still got his shoes on.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, I've been there, man.
Take your shoes off.
He's just really upset, and he's on his bed with his little shoes on. We've all been there. It was, and he's sort of talking into his phone that he's put on his pillow, just can't even be bothered to hold his phone up. Oh, I thought that was a really nice touch.
I will say the dog has the strangest role in this story as well compared to the others.
I mean, I really laughed at
at the role the dog ultimately plays.
So great.
There's also just great dialogue, like when the students see him getting into the lift and like, oh, he's so old. I bet he has Woody Allen or Kirby Enthusiasm or Seinfeld bucks or something. Ugh.
Yep.
Yeah,
I think this Todd Solondz really having a go at millennials here.
Yeah,
And then we get to the fourth story, which is horrendously depressing.
But it does contain my favourite character out of
fantasy.
Yeah,
fantasy's an amazing character. Yeah, so this is Ellen Burstyn is a sort of aging woman. She's dying, and her granddaughter, played by Zosia Mehmet, and her boyfriend Fantasy, who is. I don't know how to describe fantasies.
He's in a cellophane waistcoat.
Modern artist who hates Damien Hirst.
Yeah, to say the least.
Can we say what he does in his art, or is it a little bit of spoiler?
Yeah, I think so. Well, he says what he does.
Yeah, he kind of
taxidermy,
but then with a robotic twist.
Yeah.
This is again Todd Solondz having a go at millennials. Saying how ridiculous your generation is that this thing happens.
What you call art.
Yeah.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
But then, like, bringing in Zosia Mehmet from Girls, which is like the ultimate millennial show.
Totally. And bringing in Greta Gerwig from Frances Ha, I think, is another conscious, almost stunt casting in a way.
Mm.
So this is what you're used to seeing her in, but here she is in this. I think it's very well done.
The dog is renamed in this little bit as well.
Cancer.
Yep. Ellen Burstyn renames the dog Cancer.
Yeah.
Because it seemed right.
Yeah. And we spoke earlier about young, high-pitched, slow-paced voices of children.
Oh, yeah. And this is terrifying.
This takes it to the max. Mm.
There's like these phantom children that represent each aspect of Ellen Burstyn's personality just appear. They're all played by the same girl, and it's pretty terrifying.
Yeah, she's got this really amazing long red hair that feels like Stacey Martin.
Stacey Martin, yeah.
So
yeah.
Stacey Martin in Tale of Tales, if you saw that, she had this bed of...
long, not ginger, red. Yeah. Blood red hair, yeah.
Yeah, and the young Ellen Burstyns, which there are at least 10, 12...
Yeah.
...dotted around, all saying, hello.
Hello.
I am you if you... did this. Mm. Hi, me. If you went to the shops one day,
creepy little action.
Yeah,
like the ghosts of the past, the present, and the future.
Yes.
In I keep wanting to say the Muppets. It's not in the Muppets.
Wait, what? So before we go into spoiler territory, we've been pretty positive about the film. I think it's a really well-made film, really well put together. I often have a problem with these anthology films a bit because I just think you always ultimately prefer one story to the other, and some of them just seem a bit out of place. But here I think they fit really well. It's nice that they don't interweave and jump back and forth. It's nice that there is this, then this. Nice structure, nice like chapters. It's not for dog lovers. It's not a film about a dog or about animals. Absolutely see the film. It's really funny, really dark, but it is genuinely a really funny film. Amazing ensemble cast. You're not going to see a film like this year, I think, and it's always a treat when a Todd Solondz film is released.
Oh, definitely.
So go and see it. See it and then come back, because we're going to talk now about the spoilery stuff. We're going to go into more detail, I think, about what we're talking about the treatment of the dog. Why do you think he chose a dog
I think a dog is one of the few taboos in modern cinema. The bad, you can get away with any number of things. Quentin Tarantino can kill people in a million different ways, but if Quentin Tarantino does something to a dog,
yeah,
it's ultimately much, much worse.
Yeah.
And we like there are websites set up to warn people about the treatment of animals in films, and I think you can treat other people far worse than you can treat a dog.
Yeah.
And I think Todd Solondz is definitely playing on that.
Well, this film was booed at Sundance because of that ending.
Come on.
Yeah.
Really?
People were really angry about this film. Mm. Which, I mean...
I mean, it's a harsh ending.
I love dogs, but I mean, I think I don't really get angry about it because it's not real.
Yeah, it's not real. I was just about to say that didn't really happen.
I think we've seen a million different things. Like you said, we've seen a million different things happen to humans and children in films. So you think the point of the dog is to... is a conscious exploitation of that fear of mistreating animals and punishing the sensitive.
Also, in an interview, he was talking about how like people portray innocence onto their dog and the idea that they're being very good to their dog because they're getting their dog spayed. And he kind of in the film does a comparison with, well, would you want to be spayed in a later story? Mm. And the differences to do with that. Which, again, it's very dark, but I thought was done very well.
Yeah.
And I think there are a lot of animal rights people that have been very against this film. And I think, however, if you watch the film and you view that dog as a human character and the way that people treat it,
yeah,
I think it's actually a film that is very pro.
Oh, totally.
I agree. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, it's about how horrible humans are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It could almost be a baby.
Yes.
It's an innocent life that's been brought into these people's lives, whether or not they ask for it.
Yeah.
Like, even in the first story, the mother doesn't want it.
Yeah.
And the father does. And this is brought in, and they kind of just have to deal with it. And you see the treatment of that, and you, as soon as you start viewing that dog as a person instead of an animal, then this film is just a lesson in abuse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. The end of the first film, it's going to be put down because it has explosive diarrhea after eating a granola bar. Mm. But then Greta Gerwig saves the dog and nurses it back to health. And I think your comparison about it being like a baby is most apparent then, because she's cradling it and she's feeding it from a bottle, which there's something slightly disturbing about that image.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm pretty freaked out by animals in human clothing. So that scene didn't help. That I was like a bit like, oh, I want this to stop very quickly.
Oh, so if a lady's put a little parka on a chihuahua.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Or run away.
Run away. Or even like the painting of the dogs playing poker.
Okay.
Even that's just a bit like, that's just wrong. I don't like it. I'm out. But Zootropolis is fine.
Oh, right, okay. Secret Life of Pets, no.
Yeah, no.
What did you think when she stole it?
I thought that this, I found it quite nice. Because, you know, often dogs are, if a dog has diarrhea, that's usually the end of it. It has to be put down. It was quite a nice, transition to the next story, I thought. Yeah. Very nicely done.
I thought so too.
Yeah, and it does make a point that a lot of animals do get put down when arguably
unnecessarily.
They don't need to. And it is just, sadly, a cheaper option.
Yes.
Well, I definitely felt like Tracy Letts and Julie Delpy's characters never wanted this dog really in the first place. And they're pretty horrible to the dog and pretty negative about it. And I think that they wanted to do that from the start.
Mm.
But it was also a nice way to tell you something about Greta Gerwig's character without any dialogue. Or anything else, all she does is save a dog who's about to be put down, and instantly you know what kind of character she is.
Mm.
Yep, but you would think that. You think, oh, wow, here's this heroine that's coming in and saving this dog. And then within a minute, you feel like, wow, that's the only adventurous thing
she's ever done.
Yeah. So again, you've got someone who's caring, but also for her, this is a big deal that she's slightly stuck in her way. You know, the way she dresses, the way her apartment looks is very drab, very dull.
Mm.
So yeah, you're right, this is a great way to show that she's cat. This is her one adventurous thing, and this is quite a thrill for her. And then she meets up with her former flame or something like that.
And it does show this and maybe a couple of elements in the first film with the child, the benefits that a dog can have on people as well, of getting them to step outside of themselves. And a bit of escapism, and how having this thing that depends on you can help yourself.
And kind of, oh, you might not do it for you, but you'll do it for the dog, and then you end up doing it for you anyway. Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, what did you make of the... So the second story is relatively straightforward.
Mm-hmm.
Brendan goes to on a road trip to find his brother... has Down syndrome. Him and his wife both have Down syndrome. He tells him that their father's died due to alcoholism. Which you were saying earlier, you liked the way that was revealed.
Yeah, because after the first one, you're settled into this idea that there's not necessarily going to be a heavy amount of plot,
mm-hmm.
and it's more just an observational film. And I felt quite comfortable in this Greta Gerwig, Kieran Culkin story. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was very nice to look at, actually. It was very well shot, the whole film was, but this one in particular. I mentioned earlier that the shot of within the little supermarket. And then it just completely caught me off guard because I was so comfortable in the story and I didn't feel like it needed anything to explain it. And... sometimes when a film goes out of its way to explain why something is happening, it feels like, oh, I didn't really need that. But in this sense, it really made sense of it, and it actually made it better for it as well.
I really agree with that point. And also the idea of talking bluntly to people. So obviously someone with a learning disability or with Down syndrome is going to be patronised a lot in their life. And then his brother just doesn't patronise him at all and talks to him on the same level. Mm. And I thought that was great.
And I think this is in a lot of representations of disability or people with an illness or someone with Down syndrome in a film. It can either go one way or the other.
Yeah.
That they can do... The point they're making is that, oh, these people need... a lot of help, mm-hmm. or they don't need any help.
Yeah.
They can do things by themselves.
Yeah.
And this film, I think it does draw awareness, particularly when Greta Gerwig's character is out taking a walk with the wife.
Yes.
And she does get uncomfortable, and she does want to go home. But the point is that she tried to go out, she tried to do this thing, but she can't do that, and that's fine.
Yeah, totally. And
you don't, like, a lot of the time it can just be, well, this person without a disability came in, and made everything better.
Totally. Yeah. And also, so the husband is playing violent video games, which is great because it's a whole thing of, like, disabled people are angelic and really good. And, and like, it's great to have that in there, that he's really enjoying smashing a woman's head in.
There's also this, the way this ends. So it's got a very happy ending where they're holding hands in the car, Greta Gerwig and Brendan. But there's a little line of dialogue before that, which just took me back quite a bit, which is when Greta Gerwig asked what happens if your brother and his wife have kids, and he says, oh, dad took care of that. Like,
yeah, he effectively neutered.
He neutered them.
Yeah, which is a throwback
to the first one. But I was just like, whoa, this suddenly was like, oh, okay, that's a weird comparison with the first one about how they treated a dog and how his father's treated his son.
I think that plays into what we were talking about earlier about seeing the animal as a human being.
Yeah.
And now we suddenly think, oh, that's really bad for a human.
Yeah.
That done to them without their own
consent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's a tough thing.
Yeah.
But something that I'd like to mention from that one that I really enjoyed was there was a nice bait and switch with the mariachi band. That they pull up and see the mariachi band, and then tonally you think, oh, cool, they're going to pick up the mariachi band, and now we're going to get a lovely sequence of the mariachi band in the back of the van and the dog with his head out the window and everyone having a nice sing-song. And all the mariachi band do is get in the car and then talk about how
homesick they are.
And how bad it is in America. I thought that was really, really funny.
Oh, yeah, that's quite horrible. I forgot about the mariachi band.
Yeah.
Okay, so on to the third story now. So we have the intermission. We have no idea how the dog ends up with Danny DeVito. But this story ends with the dog in a dress, which, you know, I found quite horrible.
It's yellow.
A bright yellow dress with a bomb.
Yes. Although I don't think it is a bomb.
Oh, no, it's definitely not a bomb.
No.
It's just because he's so bored and so depressed that he just wants something. That's the what if. What if a screenwriter was so depressed he strapped a bomb to his dog in the university he teaches at?
But the shot of this sausage dog in a yellow tutu walking after him with a bomb.
Yeah. But you say this is the only film that exercises the what if, what next. We don't have the what next.
No, we don't.
It's taking the mick out of his own idea.
Because
There is no then what. Yeah.
And isn't his last line, what if I am?
Yeah.
Which is great.
Do we know the bomb doesn't go off?
No.
That's another thing that I thought, why they are separate dogs.
Mm.
Because maybe this dog does explode.
Yeah,
and then it's a completely different dog. Cancer is a different dog in the final segment.
Okay.
Yeah, and they all in the first film, he's just called Wiener Dog.
Yeah,
or she's just called Wiener Dog. Like, doesn't have a name.
Yeah,
and I think that runs. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
how these dogs are linked.
No. But I just thought that it's interesting that we don't have there wasn't confirmation that the bomb didn't go off.
That's a good point. I just kind of thought it wasn't a real bomb.
I mean, I'm sure it probably is, but I mean, part of me did think it could be a real bomb. That is there.
Totally. And for him as a director, kind of to have that, I would almost expect, like, on the edge of the shot, just an ambulance siren, just, you know?
Yeah.
That could have been nice.
Yeah.
And I think as a teacher at that university, he would take a lot of pleasure in blowing it up.
I think so. Especially, it's just after the scene where these students are talking about how old school he is and how he probably has Woody Allen collections at home.
Yeah.
And then for them to be blown up by a sausage dog, I think would be quite amusing to him.
Yeah.
Also, one of my favourite moment in this segment was when he's on the phone and he says to his new agent, I love you. It was just so the most pathetic thing I think I've ever seen.
That's when he's on the bed with his shoes on.
He's like, I love you. It's like, oh my God, this man has hit rock bottom. A woman he's never met before.
I know.
And has known,
This is prime Solon's territory.
Yeah.
Being on the other end of the phone to a horrible conversation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think this is what he's good at. He's good at just dialogue that makes you feel uncomfortable for the people involved, for the actors. And for yourself. This is the kind of filmmaker that makes you finish a film and think, oh, I need a shower.
It took me a month to process happiness. I just couldn't. Kept getting flashbacks. It was horrible.
So then we get to after. So we assume he's arrested.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe the dog's put into care and then adopted by Ellen Burstyn. Who knows? Because then the dog's in the care of Ellen Burstyn. Ellen Burstyn. And yeah, we've got Fantasy and Zoe rock up and ask for money. And the dog here really plays no part, I found, in this last story, apart from the ending.
I don't know. I just felt the dog's presence a lot more in
okay.
it. Because it is this...
Because it's called cancer?
Not because it's called cancer. I just think because it's a nice little youthful ball of energy and joy
that she doesn't have.
It just sits around, but it's a nice thing to look at because it is it's a popular breed of dog amongst young people at the moment. Mm. And so to then suddenly have it just sitting next to this old woman with these big blind dark glasses who's dying and named it cancer, you suddenly feel that dog is very out of place. And I was very aware of that dog.
That's a really good point. And also her granddaughter says, like, oh, I think it's really good that you got a dog.
That's true.
And kind of makes a little comment about it.
So should we get to the ending? Where the dog runs into the road and is not only run over, but smeared across the road by several different cars. And it stays on this shot. It's from a distance away. But
you see the blood.
There's blood and guts everywhere. And this shot lasts for... years.
I kept thinking it was going to end.
I was like, please end now. And then another car would come and smear it even further over the road. Really horrible moment.
Great selection of cars as well, just for the comedy. Like, lots of big lorries and then just and ages.
Nice
and then
breaks
quite a small
between
smart
each
car.
One. Yeah.
And no cars going down the other side of the road.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is like, I think it's just saying, like, we see every human as this dog.
Yeah.
Ultimately, there is... just one road of cars that will come and get you.
Yeah.
And won't stop. Yeah. Ever.
Yeah, that's it.
It's not going to stop. It doesn't stop.
If there was any hope after the first run.
A lorry would come by and just paint with like a paintbrush across a canvas, just smear even further. Were you shocked that this happened?
I was kind of expecting it, but to see it in that way, I mean, I laughed. Because it was so shocking.
Yeah. I assumed the dog would die, but not in this way.
So I was prepping a film quiz before I watched it, and I was doing a round where the answer was one of the actors, one of the eight different actors from the film. And I was on IMDb trivia trying to get some notes on it and saw what the last scene was because of finding out about the audience reaction from Sundance. And so I knew... about the ending before I started the
film.
Did
you know about the art installation as well?
No.
Okay. No. So that's kind of a weird little epilogue where the dog becomes one of Fantasy's shows.
And it barks. It turns its head round.
It's now doomed to live the rest of its life, in quotes life, as just a prop.
Which I think is a comment about death.
Yeah, and it's now a prop and it's hollow and it's being forced by someone else to do the same thing over and over again.
Mm. And there's no pride in it.
No.
I think in a lot of taxidermy, people, as you were saying, about reconstructing dogs to look like they're playing poker.
Yeah.
There's no pride in that. There's no pride in the animal that was there.
No.
When going back to this comparison between humans and the animal, when we die, we don't get... maybe it would look great if you stuffed me and put me in an art gallery. And
they do at UCL, don't they? They've got that man all stuffed.
Yeah. But it's not common practice compared to how we...
No, it's not.
Like, how often that happens with animals. Yeah. The treatment of animals being what a last taboo in cinema. Killing a dog. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, doesthedogdie.com exists?
Well, I think that in... most films with animals, they often die, but in a less aggressive way than this. Not even aggressive, in a less... this is just so... it doesn't care about the dog. Like, most films, they have a very, like... I'm going to spoil Marley and Me here, guys. When the dog is killed, it's overly... it's really emotional, and it's a big deal, and everyone talks about Marley and Me as one of the great tearjerkers. Here, it just... it happened, it's dead.
Yeah.
And it's a really horrible death, but there's no music. There's no one crying over the dog. It's just dead.
Yeah.
I suppose it's had four different owners. No one's really cares for it because it's lost all its owners as well. And it's just got nothing left to do but die. It's almost like it kills itself.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, because it does just walk off. But it's almost like, I'm going for a walk. I might be so tired.
Do you think it's after that she just couldn't deal with the 12 creepy children?
Hello! Yeah. No, I'm done.
It's like Richard Parker. He just went so unceremonious.
Yeah.
He'd never turn back.
Okay, I think we're going... Okay, I think we're going to wrap up there. So we'll be back next week. But in the meantime, do check out a selection of films on Curzon Home Cinema. There's quite a few films that we've discussed on the show over the last few months that are available on there. So do check that out. Thank you very much for listening. Sorry, it's been a bit of a depressing episode talking a lot about death and mistreating animals, but it's life. So it's goodbye from Helen.
Goodbye.
Goodbye from Jake for your first ever live goodbye.
Well done, Jake.
Go on. Oh, no. and it's goodbye from me, and we'll see you next week.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.